How many of you have heard of Van Eyck? Well, we lost a couple of you in the translation. This is not Van Dyke, the guy who invented beards and mustaches, but mostly beards. Van Dyke had a great thing for dark brown beards, and Van Dyke was a very Baroque painter and painted kings and princesses on horseback and portraits, and was generally, in his total output, a very dull fellow, although I understand he's a couple of you are related to him. Who's a relative of Van Dyke? You got the whole thing, don't you? All you need is a horse and a sword. But he's dull. You want equal time? No. You're right, he is. You just okay, but Van Eyck is a completely different breed of cat. Although I'm not altogether sure that he is that much more interesting than Van Dyke. It's just that he is one of my crazy friends, and for that reason it behooves me to make him interesting. It's kind of like the Italians. You never want to let the truth get in the way of a good story, and I've got some tremendous stories about this guy, but Van Eyck is a fascinating character because he sort of steps on a lot of our concepts about what art should be and what art should look like. Now, I think if I would ask you all what does modern art look like? Well, I throw out the word modern. I don't mean sort of modern, I mean really up-to-date modern art. If you closed your eyes, could you come up with some kind of an image that would sort of give you a general impression of what modern art should look like? Can you throw me an adjective? Oh no, come on. Put your finger down. That's pointing does not count. I want an adjective, and be nice. I'm sorry about that. That's a whole other problem. Close your eyes and try and think of an image. What is modern art like? What does it look like? Pardon? Abstract. There's a word. Abstract. What does abstract look like? That's a word. You got to hang in there with me because I'm a visual person. Words don't sound like anything to me. They only look like something to me. So if you're not looking at words, you and I are not communicating. So I got to know that for every word that I throw out, you've got some kind of image. And there's another reason for that. I'm going to turn out the lights pretty soon, and you're going to be stuck with your own little images in there, and it'll be very important that you have an image. So if I say abstract art, what does that look like? Anybody? Is anything, huh? Chaotic. Okay. If I said abstract art, does that sound kind of calm and relaxed to any people? Most of you might think of it as being sort of a jumble, maybe mysterious, Maybe like you want to get to the other side of the room so that it all gets into focus, and maybe then you'll see what the artist is trying to get at, and maybe you won't. Maybe you conclude that the artist isn't trying to get at anything, that he's just sort of messing around with paint or whatever else art people mess around with, which is about anything they can get their hands on. Yeah, and what about subject matter? What is the subject matter of abstract art? Hard to tell. Maybe there isn't any. Maybe the subject matter of abstract art is color or design or something like that. Maybe it isn't, you know, a banana or a naked lady, or a Jesus, or I don't mean to build priorities with that list. I'm just saying it as it comes out. Came out like a Trinity there for a minute. It's not. You don't want to go looking into abstract art for something. It's just there. What you see is what you get. It's not what it refers to. And so there is kind of a hue and cry, has been for quite some time now, for something that is real. How's that for a word? I want something that is real. Something I can look at and I can recognize, like a barn. Huh? Oh man, whatever happened to good old barn paintings, you know? Or how about a wave? Can you dig it? I mean, a great big wave. I want to look at it and hear it break on the shore. Okay, huh? Oh, covered bridge. I should tell you stories about your folks. Oh, I traveled with her parents throughout Europe, and I know where she gets that covered bridge thing. She gets that from her mother. Oh, Harry, look at the tree. The tree, Harry, look at the tree. And it's just an old tree, and Harry's looking at the tree, you know, and oh, my God, a covered bridge. Oh, I mean, I'm from Indiana, and we got covered bridges up the kazoo, you know, and it's just covered. And what do you want over your mantle? What do you want over the fireplace, huh? A sailboat. Oh, that's boring. What else? a horse. A horse. Somebody's walking around with a horse on their back today. If that isn't weird. No, have you seen it? It's on somebody's back. Who's got the horse? It's on somebody's. You got it? You got the horse on your back? Is that weird? Just the front of the horse. The front of the horse on somebody's back. Now, that is what we call abstract. Huh? Do you understand that? Now, you see this? The back of somebody with the front of a horse. You know? That's unusual. That's very, we've got a lot of unusual abstract things. You ever see up in the, is it Lodge 1? And the garden in front of the lodge? And there's this beautiful guy, the head, singing head. Have you seen that? And it's, He's from here down, he's a log. And he's only about 2 feet high. And he has been singing like, it's like the Incredible Mouth. It's like that movie where this guy's brain is sitting there attached to pumps, and it's just making all these incredible decisions. Here is this marvelous head attached to a log, and it's sitting down there. You can't even look at him without crawling around down in the flower beds. Eileen says, that is really grotesque. Will you get rid of that head? And I'm trying to get the idea maybe the head should be on a stump that is at least 5.5 feet tall. So, he would look more like one of us. You know, maybe it's like... It's close enough. It's close enough, but that you gotta have it down low. That is very abstract. Very. All kinds of tremendously abstract things going on here, but sometimes we don't realize it. We don't want to call it art, and actually it's not something we want to live with on a day-to-day basis. What we really want to live with is something that's real. Covered bridges, sailboats, a Jesus. I don't want to get into that, because a real Jesus is also a real bummer. You ever stop to think of that? I mean, what is Jesus really like? A 32-year-old Jew over the mantle place? No, come on, not over my mantle place. No way. I mean, a guy who studied carpentry? A picture of a 32-year-old Jewish carpenter over the mantelpiece? No. A guy that you might be able to run into in the store downtown over my mantle? No way. No way. Give me a dolled-up thing with lights around the head. You know, just oozing little juicy light. Who's nifty, neat-looking, kind of Van Dyke, you know, except get rid of the glasses and the hat, you know, but a nice light, a nice nifty light, that's abstract. Your concepts of Jesus are abstract. So watch out when you ask for something real. Because you might get it, and you might find that it is very, very hard to live with. I show you for instances. Are you there? I love it. I love it because you hate it. Well, we're going to talk this week about losers and winners, and some paintings are losers and some paintings are winners. This is a loser and I love it. You got to love the losers. But isn't that what you think about when you think about modern art? Ta-da! Jackson Pollock, 23 feet long, drip and drool school. Pokes the holes in the bottom of cans of enamel and stands up on a ladder and just twirls them around, paints with a broom. I would love to give you a lesson on how to appreciate this stuff, because it is extremely important. The old game about if somebody comes and excavates us 2,000 years from now and finds, a book about the art of our period, who will be included? This man will be included. Oh yes, he will. Probably the most important artist of our time after Picasso. So I give you an alternative. Is that real enough for you folks? That is real. That's a painting. That's a painting. Now, it looks an awful lot like a photograph. And so some of you are going to say, well, I don't want something quite that real. I'd like something maybe sort of semi-abstract, you know. Something I can identify and nobody else can, so that I'll look good in front of my friends. Everybody knows what this is, so it doesn't count. Well, wait till you get a load of Van Eyck. Van Eyck is born in 1390, and that puts him kind of at the end of an important Gothic age. And he started his whole training painting manuscripts, doing little tiny paintings for manuscripts. This entire page you're looking at here is 10 inches high, the whole thing. So you can envision Van Eyck at his drawing table with a, I don't know what you call it, a jeweler's glass squeezed into his eye and a brush with only one hair in it, and his tongue sticking out of the left side of his mouth. Boy, was he neat. Incredibly neat. Every time I look at Van Eyck, I think of all of the penmanship things that I flunked in grade school. Absolutely every kid's little page, the yellow papers with the lines across them, they all got put up on the blackboard except mine. I kept writing across the lines, going the other direction. Not Van Eyck. Boy, could he stay inside the lines. Whoa! A whole painting. Tiny, tiny, tiny. This page is the size of your hymn book. Oh, you ain't seen nothing. Here is a little painting of also about the size of your hymn book. This is a page. And down below, you got a landscape and the baptism of Jesus with the whole city of Ghent in the background. It is. It's there. I kid you not. Now, is that real? No, it isn't. Nobody sees like that. Van Eyck is abstracting by painting what he knows, not what he sees. I mean, I could stand, even with the lights on, could stand in front of you, and what would I see? Not much more than a blur of color. And it doesn't have to do with the fact that I got bifocals and that most of you are running across that little line and that goes across the middle of the glasses. It's not that at all. It's just that it is not the business of the eye to count all the hickeys and the zits and the hair follicles and the, you know, whatever you got on there, and check whether it's plaid or dotted Swiss and all of that stuff. It's just a great big overall view, but not for Van Eyck. And the reason is that because he is heir to the Gothic age, he considers a view of reality and the knowingness of reality to have mystical significance. Everything means something incredibly important, including the city where he lives, the sunrise, the sunset. So we look at the birth of the Virgin up on top there. And it's a little Flemish room. The dog is eating out of the dish. The slippers are at the foot of the bed. The lamp is lit. And it is not just dog and slippers and lamp. It is faithfulness, and take off your shoes, for the ground you are standing on is holy ground. And the lamp is lit with the light of God. And it becomes not just visual reality, but the knowing about what that reality represents. This is hard to see, but I show it to you because it's the way Van Eyck paints. All of his painting is this way. Just to give you an idea of the technique. This is a painting, and you're looking at it, it's much larger than actual size. It's a painting of St. Barbara, and it's not done yet. painted on wood, and then the wood is coated with a kind of plaster of Paris, and it is then sanded smooth as glass, and then a complete painting is painted on in shades of brown, kind of looks when he's done like a sepia tone photograph, and that's done in a water-based pigment. And then over the top of that water-based painting is floated oil in solution, very, very thin oil color. Van Eyck was the first to use oil color in easel painting, the very first. He invented the technique of oil. Now he floats these glazes on top of that brown painting, and he doesn't paint shadows and all of that stuff, because the shadows are all painted on this brown painting underneath. He just puts down the color, and one color on top of another, on top of another, and sometimes in his painting there are as many as 12, 14, 18, 20 layers of colors, one on top of the other, and you read all the way through them down to this brown painting underneath, which has now become colored by the glazes. It's a highly technical media. It's called the Flemish mixed method. And the technique itself and all of that preciseness is the reason why, if we go to the Cathedral of Saint-Bavon in Ghent today, we can look at Van Eyck paintings that look like they're still wet. Like he painted them just last week, and they're still a little tacky. No cracks, no flaws, no dusty stuff like Rembrandt's. None of that at all. They are bright, shiny, and glistening. His time was a time in which the burghers in Flanders were increasingly wealthy and were calling for commissions. Not so much the churches were commissioning paintings now, but the wealthy middle class, the guilds and the burghers. And so Van Eyck did an awful lot of portraits. Now you have to take almost every one of these paintings I'm showing you and look at them as though they are miniatures. This one's about a foot high. An archbishop. There's a wealthy burgher, looks like a mean man. But he's got a little flower in his hand, so he's not all bad. Is that right, Eileen? Yeah. And that's his wife. Now we know why he looks so mean. See me later. The marriage of Jan Arnolfini and his wife. Now, lest you get suspicious in your... You're ahead of me. Are you looking at her tummy? Oh, you people. Charity, folks. That is not a Milwaukee goiter. She is not pregnant. That is the nature of her costume. That is what we call the empire look. And it is just simply a high belt and a lot of fabric hanging out of it. And she has now held it up and is poofing it out in front. This is a portrait of them, but it is more than that. It is a wedding certificate. You'll see at the front, once again, the little puppy. That's faithfulness. The sandals are down in the lower left-hand corner. That's the holy ground, the sacredness of marriage. You see in the back, a mirror on the wall. In the mirror is reflected the back of Jan Arnolfini and his wife, and they are facing an open door. The door is open, and the artist, Jan Van Eyck, is standing in the doorway painting their portrait. He... Do you love? Is he crazy? He is the witness. And you see written over the mirror, Jan van Eyck, Hoc Sintint. Jan van Eyck was here, like Kilroy. So it's a wedding certificate, and Jan van Eyck was the witness, not only with his signature, but with his self-portrait. Van Eyck did scads of devotional paintings. This is about actual size, but it includes the whole interior of Saint-Bavon Cathedral, along with the Virgin Mary. This one is a big favorite. I think the Metropolitan Museum made a Christmas card out of this. A cathedral interior in which the Annunciation takes place. Up there on your left is a painting of Saint Francis of Assisi receiving the stigmata. All right? That painting is about 18 inches by 12 inches. Okay? About like so. This is a detail of the portrait of Saint Francis from that painting. So it would be about the size of a quarter. Can you see right in front of Saint Francis the little city in the distance?
Whoa!
This guy should have made dollar bills or something. He could have, could have made each one by hand. Nobody would have known. Oh, there's a parade down there. There's people hanging their wash out of the windows. There's, in fact, a little hanky-panky on the fourth floor of the palace, but I won't... Remember when we talked about Sacra Conversazione? Any of you here that were here for that? And here is another example. We talked about that when we showed the saints. Here is Van Eyck's version of a Sacra Conversazione. He has called the Virgin has called a couple ecclesiastical dignitaries and a knight over for afternoon tea. And they are paying proper homage. This is about the actual size of the painting. All right? That's about the actual size. You see the little old fellow kneeling over on the right in the white? There he is. And Saint George is the knight and is presenting this fellow to the Virgin Mary. This fellow is the one who commissioned the painting. Now that's pretty cheeky, isn't it? I was sticking himself right in there with Saint George, Jesus, and the Virgin Mary. This is an incredible painting. Incredible. That first painting that you saw with Saint Barbara, just the brown sepia tone painting, Van Eyck finally finished the painting of Saint Barbara, and there she is in black over on the far right. She's one of the favorite saints, and you always tell St. Barbara because she has a tower. Her father kept her locked in a tower so that, I don't know why. Those medieval people did things for the weirdest reasons. Isn't she neat? She is in actual size about the height of your hand. I couldn't find a blow-up of the crown that's in her hand, but it is an incredible still life. Now you talk about reality, and boy, anybody that can paint this sure must have a good eye, but that isn't true. These people were still learning to see. And you think, my goodness, the guy sees all right, looks okay to me, but look close. Where is the light coming from? From the opening in the center back of the painting, right? Look at the shadow on St. Luke's face. You see that? The shadow is toward the light source. The light is on this side, away from the light. That's a mistake. That is a boob. Can you imagine finishing this whole painting and then looking at it and say, oh, no. Oh, I think that's neat. Oh, back to the drawing boards. This was a time of pestilence and plague, also a time that was very concerned about judgment, in a way similar to that of the time of Gisobertus. And Van Eyck did one of the most graphic portraits of hell that we have in all of art history. I hesitate to show you a detail, but it gives you an idea of what the relationship of the damned are to Satan. Isn't that disgusting? We're going to talk about Grunewald on Thursday. Grunewald is an incredible person, and I have many reasons for wanting to talk about him. But he's kind of heavy. But one of the neat, I say something? One of the neat things about Grunewald is that he is most known by one painting. And Van Eyck also is known most of all because of one painting, which is comprised of many paintings. It's called a polytip, and it's called the Ghent altarpiece, and it is in Ghent in the Cathedral of Saint-Bavon. It's a painting which opens up. This is the way it looks from the outside. On the outside you have the donors down at the bottom with two saints that are painted as though they are marble statues, and a kind of whitish depiction above of the Annunciation. I think I have some details. Those are the donors. Now these portraits are maybe about a foot high each, or approximately one-fourth of the size that you're looking at there. And that's the Annunciation above. But the fascinating thing about the Ghent altarpiece is what happens when you open it up. Now you just open this thing up, and what you see is about, I'm trying to think. It would be approximately twice that size. Approximately twice this size. And I'll show you some details over here. Now this of course, is it would be smaller than what you're looking at here. This is the Virgin Mary and John the Baptist sitting on either side of Christ on the throne. There's an Adam with a, up in the upper left-hand corner, with an angel choir, and there is Eve on the right-hand side with another angel choir. She is sort of pot-bellied. She is very pot-bellied, as a matter of fact. And I'm not quite sure what the sense of the depiction of Adam and Eve is supposed to be, whether it's to depict a state of fallen, of having fallen from grace, or what. But they are so realistic that it's almost an embarrassment to see that kind of reality juxtaposed with abstract concepts like angels. That's a detail of the head of Christ in the center. We can't go into too much detail here, but I wish I had some better details. You see the red stone on the crown, and above it is a little bluish stone. There is a brilliant reflection in that stone, and it is a reflection of Jan van Eyck sitting at his easel doing this painting. This is the crown that sits at his feet. And to give you an even better idea of how this thing was painted, that is a detail of the robe. Can you see that? Can you see about where that is? Now just think of that circle up there of stones and pearls, each with their own reflection, being about the size of a quarter. Oh, we're not done. It gets funnier. Now down below is the central panel, which is the main piece panel for the entire work, the Adoration of the Mystic Lamb. And there's a detail of it. Now, this is much larger than actual size. All right? We have a kind of mystical altar, as you can see over here, with angels gathered round. Angels gathered around a fountain which is suggestive of baptism, and saints and angels at the bottom. There's a cluster of them. And this is almost actual size, just a little larger than actual size. All of the vegetation, the flowers, even the weeds on the ground can be identified. They are botanically perfect. There's the cluster on the other side. We're going counterclockwise from lower left to lower right. Now let's check out the lady saints. We have lady saints above and on one side and men saints on the other side, sort of like a Missouri Synod Church arrangement. There are the lady saints, all carrying palm branches. In the background is the city of Antwerp. On the left-hand side is the Cathedral of Saint-Bavon, where this painting hangs. In the belfry is a little monk, and he is holding up four fingers as he rings the bell to tell us what time of the day it is. Now, can you see the monks, the ecclesiastical folks are gathered over there. They're coming out from behind the rose bush. And this is a painting about actual size, all right? Let's look at them closer. We can tell which bishopric each of these bishops represents, because we read the Stadtwappen on their ring. This guy is crazy. He is out of his tree. And yet, in the middle of the whole thing, outside the city of Antwerp, he sticks a palm tree? What can we learn? We can learn from Van Eyck a couple of things. I think patience must be one thing. This entire painting, the whole Ghent altarpiece, took him only 4 years to paint while he was also doing many other commissions at the same time. So he was speedy. But he was neat, but there was an incredible vision that he had. Realism is not just simply a duplication of what the eye sees. Realism may have as much to do with what the heart acknowledges, what the mind interprets, as well as what we know in relationship to what we see. So when you understand that, then maybe even Jackson Pollock has painted a kind of essence of reality. It does not compare with what we see out there, but this does not either. There is no way that you could pass the Cathedral of Saint-Bavon 4 miles down the road and notice a monk with four fingers up there in the belfry ready to ring the bell. You do not see like that. So all of art, and I got a hunch maybe all of faith, is this wonderful, strange relationship between what we see and what we know. Thank you very much.